From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. This is Idaho Matters. Early voting is underway here in our state, and it will continue into November. So here's a question. How popular is it, and can anybody vote early? Now, because it is a presidential election year, there's been a lot of focus on not just who gets elected, but also on how our election system works at both a national and a local level. So to answer those questions that have come up this election cycle, including early voting, we asked Idaho Secretary of State Phil McGrane to join us every Tuesday through the election to talk about these issues, and he's joining us today. Phil, nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Gemma. Good to be back.
Okay, so early voting, as I said, is underway here in Idaho. So how long does it last?
Early voting has kicked off. A few counties started early, but this week really is the real kickoff for early voting. So all this week, 8 to 5, you can show up to any of the early voting locations, as well as next week. Friday at 5 p.m. next week will be the end of early voting on November 1st. And then beyond that, it'll be Election Day voting. And I'm happy to say a lot of people are showing up for early voting already.
So why is there a gap, Phil? Why does it end on November 1?
A lot of it is just the logistics of getting ready. Election Day is a huge day for the county clerks to set up all the polling locations statewide. So the clerks need that last weekend and additional time to get the e-poll books ready so that everything's up to date. This helps them ensure that, you know, someone who early votes today will be recorded in the poll books as having already voted, so they can't, again, show up on Election Day. And so it's just a lot of logistics. And again, just to put in context, so far we've already had 53,000 Idahoans vote early in person for this November election.
Wow, that's quite a bit. So if you have not registered to vote yet, can you early vote? Can you go to a location and register and vote?
Yeah, early voting is a really convenient option for people who are going to be busy. Election Day is a Tuesday. It's hard sometimes to make a plan on how you're going to get there, especially if you work shift work, so you work at the hospital or work in public safety. Early voting is a great opportunity to show up to your local county courthouse, elections office, or here in the Treasure Valley City Hall to get in and cast your ballot. It's the same as voting on Election Day, and it also means you can same day register at the same time. So if your registration's not up to date, it doesn't matter what part of the county you live in, you can show up, show your ID, show proof of residence, get your ballot and vote right there.
So you just mentioned so far 53,000 people have voted early in Idaho. Are you surprised that it's that many? And is that a pretty high number?
It really is a high number for early voting. I know Ada County recently announced just that they've seen a big uptick in in-person early voting for this election. We've also seen quite a few absentee ballots. So far, 91,000 Idahoans have voted by absentee. That's 145,000 folks who've already cast their vote in this election. The presidential election, you can't turn on the TV without seeing information about it. Heck, you can't listen to the intro for Idaho Matters without hearing about the presidential election. So we know that always drives a lot of attention, and we're expecting high turnout as a result. Plus, the state of Idaho is growing, so there's just more and more Idahoans to participate in this election.
I want to talk really quickly, Phil, about a report that the Idaho Capital Sun came out with last week, and it said that your office was taking 36, quote, very likely non-citizens off our voter rolls. And you did tell the Sun that some of them had voted in Idaho. So how do you find out if someone is not an Idaho resident?
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, we've talked about security, Gemma, on the show and all the things we do behind the scenes. So, you know, when someone registers to vote, we're verifying that they are who they say they are, not just by the physical ID that they show us, but we are connected to ITD and we check that information. We check with vital statistics. We check with the Department of Corrections, Social Security Administration. And I think most notably here is we've added a new check with the Department of Homeland Security where we verify citizenship. That's a partnership also with ITD, I should note. And recently, after the governor's executive order, we went through the entire voter rolls. All, I think it's 1,040,000 registered voters that we have currently, to verify and make sure there were no non-citizens on the rolls. And that's what that process was, that we identified these 36 people that were highly likely. I will say we've already determined one of those 36 is a citizen. So this is why we have to always approach this with caution. But in the national narrative, there's a lot of discussion about citizenship these days. And we wanted to really reassure Idahoans that we have the safeguards in place. And when you consider the over million registered voters and the fact that we only identified six that are likely non-citizens, that's pretty impressive to show that our process is working well.
Do folks get it who are suspected, Phil, of not being able to vote, get a chance to prove their case? As you mentioned, one of those 36 actually is a citizen.
Yes, there's a lot of due diligence that is required and just due process for the people involved. So the phase we're in is the county clerks have been making contact with these people, and they have the opportunity to both contact us and Department of Homeland Security to provide any information proving their citizenship. One of the things we don't want to do is ever disenfranchise an American citizen of their right to vote just because of our process. So we've been really thorough, and I think part of it, we show the kind of surgical approach that we've used in making these identifications to ensure that both people who can vote should be able to vote, people who can't vote shouldn't be able to vote, and that everyone can have confidence that their vote counts the same as everybody else's.
So, Phil, I want to ask a question about some races that are on the upcoming ballot, and it is because we have probably gotten more questions about this since you've been coming on Tuesdays from our listeners than any other question. And that is about the Idaho 4th Judicial District Magistrate Division judicial race. Now, we should note that there are other districts that have judicial races on the ballot. And what folks are wanting to know is, they can't find information about these magistrate judges. They want to know how they've ruled, et cetera, et cetera. So can we begin with, let's make sure that people understand who magistrate judges are, what they do. When we're looking at the ranking of judges, these are not federal magistrate judges. These are not judges who are making decisions about book banning, about transgender issues, right? They're not, this is,
right.
These are our county judges who, for the most part, do things like misdemeanors, adoptions, et cetera.
I'll say first, I'm just happy to know that your listeners are getting to that level. That shows that they're using some of the tools that we've provided. They're seeing their sample ballots. No one stumbles on that unless they've actually taken the time to request an absentee or find their sample ballot to know that these things are on there. You know, I'm a huge advocate for more information to voters. That's been one of my pushes. And we get this question a lot, too, is just people want more information about the races they're going to be voting on. And we've talked about it. Everyone knows president, but what about all these other things? And I think magistrates really are where it gets distilled down, because it's different than other elections. They're not people running against each other. The question is whether or not to retain the magistrate judge who's currently holding that position. And as you know well, these magistrates are doing the more routine work of the courts. So that means like traffic tickets, DUIs, kind of low-level criminal matters, so your misdemeanor type cases, or doing things like family law, helping settle divorces and child custody issues. And that's really what the magistrate division is doing. The district court is where you're getting like the big lawsuits against parties or the felony convictions, everything else. And it's not like the Supreme Court that is weighing in on hot button issues like abortion and other things like that. This is really just the day-to-day work of the court, which is also why it's hard to get information. These aren't really public-facing individuals. And it raises the question, we get this a lot, like, so why are we voting on them? It's very rare to not see a magistrate retained. And it is kind of a tough question, because I can't point to any great sources either. You know, during the legislative session, one of my big things was pushing for a voter guide, so at least we could get some more information out to voters. Magistrates are just one of those elements of getting more information for voters. And hopefully over time, the work that we're doing will build into some of those tools in the future.
Well, in particular, I think, Phil, what you're trying to do, trying to get a voter guide, right? Because the magistrate judge could then have at least their bio in there.
Yep.
And you could have more information, because it is difficult to find.
You could know when they became a judge and, what their background was. Yep. Some of that, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I will say this. The courts are open to the public. So if you actually do have a question about a magistrate judge, you can go to the courthouse. You can see when they're in court. You can sit in court and watch them in court. I mean, if you want to take those extra steps, I mean, you have that right as a citizen to be able to go do that.
Right. And the next time you get a speeding ticket, you can always contest it. And that way you can meet your magistrate judge.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So another thing I want to talk about, because when after we're done chatting with you today, we're going to be focusing on Proposition 1 and the issue of ranked choice voting in Prop 1. because this will be on the ballot come November 2, and there's still a lot of questions about it. You do not have to explain what it is, Phil, but we're going to get to that in the next segment. However, you told Idaho's Legislative Council in July that switching to a ranked choice voting system could cost Idaho between $25 and $40 million to replace voting machines around the state. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you came up with that number?
Yeah, I'll do the best I can in the time we've got. So I wrote a 5-page letter to the Legislative Council, and this is the group that kind of oversees, it's bipartisan, oversees the legislative process, because I didn't want any surprises to come. Over the year, while Proposition 1 was being circulated, we did our research. So we contacted our election vendors, we contacted our federal partners at the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. We also met with the state of Alaska and their elections division to get more information about what would implementation of Proposition 1 look like. And there's a number of things I'll outline in the letter. The cost piece is what gets the most attention, but I will say there's other important pieces, like Alaska doesn't have county government, neither does Maine, and these are the two places that it's been implemented. And part of it too is we use different election equipment than the state of Alaska or the state of Maine currently does. And meeting with our vendors, our current equipment that we use is not capable of tabulating a ranked choice ballot. It's not certified to do it, and the vendors don't intend to make it that way in any time. So we've looked, and we will have to go out to a competitive bid to replace all of the voting equipment statewide. And it really was working with those vendors and our partners to figure that out. The cost piece, that $25 to $40 million, really where that comes is, none of the vendors want to give us a quote at this point because it will be competitive and there will be an RFP process that we would have to go through. But it was us looking at what we've spent on the current equipment we use. So looking backwards, all of the counties that use equipment, which is the vast majority of Idaho, have purchased this equipment in the past. They will have to replace that. And so we looked into our past spending behavior, informed with what we know about where we're headed into. And it just makes our situation a little bit different. In Alaska, and I think there's a lot of comparisons there, the vendor they were using already was capable. They had, prior to the implementation of this, they had already acquired equipment that could do it. And that just puts us in a different footing.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fair to note that the Secretary of State's office, you're not advocating for or against anything. Your point in writing that 5-page letter was to give information to lawmakers.
You can appreciate we sit in the middle of all of these decisions, not just running this current election, but running any future elections with policy changes. And a lot of the arguments, you know, I'm sure in some of the conversations you'll be having are about the reasons why it should or shouldn't be done from the advocates. And we were really talking through what are the actual practical implications, such as just us getting the ballots from Bear Lake County and being able to combine them with Boundary County, because you can't do the multiple rounds of voting until you get all that information centralized. And there's a bunch of logistical and cost components, and that's really what my letter highlighted for the legislature, so that we could be part of the discourse. And we're answering as many questions as we can for anybody who's interested in this. I've talked to both sides on a regular basis in terms of what's headed in, and so hopefully voters are getting the information they need to make an informed decision.
And one quick thing that I want to talk about too before I let you go, Phil, and this is this vote tallying software. Because you say this is important because it would be certified by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. Why is that critical if we end up going to this system?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, we've been talking a lot leading into this election about security and the scrutiny. We have a position that I created in our office that just manages the certification of equipment, and we work really closely with the U.S. Election Assistance Commission to ensure the voting equipment we're using has been scrutinized to make sure it does exactly what it's intended to do, that it's secure for cybersecurity reasons, but also to ensure the accuracy of those systems. They go through rigorous testing. There is third-party software available that you could take the information out of our systems and try to calculate, but it still hasn't been federally certified or tested. And that's one of the problems is, as a small state, we rely on our federal partners to be able to ensure the quality of the systems we're using. We do testing locally as well, and the counties are doing testing right now for this election specifically. But I think to reassure all those voters who've been asking questions over the last 4 years or even over the last 20 years to make sure that we're using systems that we can all have confidence in is crucial, especially at a time where so many questions are coming up.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.